Current State on 90.5 WKAR. Thanks for joining us. Family secrets are often the stuff of suspenseful movies and fictional page-turners. Detroit native Steve Luxenberg discovered his family had one of its own, the existence of an aunt who had been shut away in a mental institution. Luxenberg recounts the story in his book, Annie's Ghosts. The novel is this year's Great Michigan Read Selection. The program is an initiative of the Michigan Humanities Council, which engages the public in a statewide discussion about the work of a Michigan-born or based author. I sat down with Steve Luxenberg this week to ask him about the hidden tale that prompted him to write the book.
Well, when a story falls in your lap,
you write it.
You write it. At least you write it 5 or 10 years later when you figure out what the hell the story was all about. My mom had a secret. She had a secret sister. And this sister was somebody I never met, never heard of. And my mom was an only child. She told us that frequently. So the idea that she had a sister was not something that fit into the picture I had of my mom and the elaborate stories she told about growing up in Detroit as an only child.
And without asking you to give too much away, why is it Ghosts of Annie in the title?
I can say ghosts on the radio and hiss. No, the reason, I thought if I called it Annie's Ghost, then it would only be about Annie. So Ghost is an attempt, at least, to have us think about all of the ghosts in our own lives, all of the ideas, secrets, stories that haunt all of us.
People today are sensitive to the use of the words like moron, and yet in Annie's era, words like this were routinely used to describe people with mental or developmental challenges. Was it hard to read that stuff in the records?
Well, you know, it's a good place to start, that question you just asked, because it tells you the job of a historian, which is to not imagine you living in the era that you live in, but the era that you're researching. Mm-hmm. And in 1910, 1920, the words moron, imbecile, things like that that we find very difficult, were in the law. They were legal terms. They were not social terms. They went from the legal language into the common language. And it's a good thing we don't use them anymore, but they were meant to make distinctions between levels of disability. Yes, it was hard to read, but it also it was important to not only read it, but to inhabit it, to understand it, to try to live in 1920, 1930, 1940, when this story starts to take place, because otherwise I would be imposing my own judgments on an era that I didn't live in.
By the end of your research about your missing aunt, did you ever feel like you got a very personal sense of who she was?
Not enough, frankly, because while I have records that tell me about the arc of her life in the 31 years that she spent at a hospital called Eloise outside of Detroit, I never felt like I was able to really know what her days were like. I got glimpses of them because I have a cousin who would take my grandmother, Annie's mother, to visit her. And she saw glimpses of Annie, but these are just glimpses. And so I really don't feel like I ever got to know her. I do know that she had enough insight, even though she had mental illnesses that put her in the hospital, to understand that she was not going to have a normal life. She said that in the records that I have. And so I feel like I got to know her at a surface level, but not at a deep level.
So many Jewish families like yours lost people during the Holocaust. Did it seem especially cruel to you that you essentially lost a family member right here in Michigan in a mental hospital?
It was cruel to my cousin Anna, who happens to have the same name as Annie, so it makes it confusing. But I have a cousin who I never met until about 8 years ago, and she was a Holocaust survivor. When I was growing up and people would ask me if they knew that I was Jewish, they would say, well, did you lose anybody in the Holocaust? I'd say, oh, no, my family all came over before World War I. It never occurred to me that, of course, that I had family members who were there because I didn't know those people. So I met Anna, who managed to survive the Holocaust, and she thought it was cruel, and she was angry at my mom and told me in no uncertain terms about the anger that she had and the argument that she had with my mom in the 1950s when I was a toddler. But I didn't feel that way. I didn't feel that way, I guess, because I think of this as a book of understanding and not of judgment. I don't feel like it's my place to sit in my mom's shoulder and tell her what she did right and wrong. I think she made the wrong choice for herself because I think her secret was a burden to her. But I don't think it's my, it's not, the story isn't about me, it's about my mother and Annie.
So you had an aunt you didn't know existed and a cousin you never met.
That's right.
Okay.
Although the cousin said I met her when I was about 2 years old, but we don't know anybody when we're two.
Your book was all about tracking down secrets within your family. When you published the book and exposed all those secrets to a potentially worldwide audience, how did that feel?
I thought a lot about whether I had a right to air the so-called dirty laundry of the family, although I don't really consider that to be an apt term for this. And I felt that if I could help other people understand that secrets, some of which can be good, there are good secrets, and some of which can be bad, to look at their own families, to look at the secrets that they hold, and perhaps release themselves from the pain and suffering of holding in those secrets, then that was a good thing. And my mom would be proud of that. Would she want this story written? Well, that probably isn't what she would have wanted. But I think that every generation creates new secrets. And so this question of how secrets affect us and what happens, I think this is something that we live with from year to year and time to time.
Do you feel secrets like this have the capacity to wreak havoc into the future?
They didn't in our case, but I do think, and I've seen evidences of wreaking havoc, because when a family member is carrying a burden, sometimes they're behaving in ways that you don't understand. And you can't understand. I did not understand some of my mom's behavior because I didn't understand what was driving her to feel the way that she was feeling. And it made it much harder when she had her own psychiatric episode, when she was in her late 70s, an episode of depression, to work with the psychiatrist, to work with the social worker, because I didn't understand what was driving her. And they didn't understand it. And so I do feel that we should not think of secrets as living and dying in one generation's time. They can roll down through the generation.
Now you're part of the Great Michigan Read. Have you encountered other people who've been inspired to look for relatives that nobody talked about because of reading your book?
Well, the book came out 3 years ago, and I get emails every week from somebody who wants my help in tracking down a relative that they've just learned about. And I give that help to them. My daughter teases me and say I ought to go into business giving that help, but I do it for free. So the Great Michigan Read begins tonight, and it'll be really interesting to see how many people want to share their own secrets. I don't think that that's a requirement when people come to the talk that I'm going to give. That's a personal matter. But there have been other talks that I've given in the state in the last 3 years since the book came out, and frequently people will ask during the Q&A period, they'll share a family story, perhaps a secret, with the audience. And I've certainly had people come up to me afterwards. The most amazing, if I can pick one, the most amazing story was when somebody came up to me with the book in their hand for me to sign. And as they handed it to me, they said, I brought the book to our Thanksgiving dinner, and we have a family secret that we were unable to talk about. And I said, please read this book. It will make you feel safe to talk about that elephant in the room that we cannot talk about. And she said, it worked. Now, what author can ask for a better story than that?
You must feel great about that.
That one story I feel great about. If that's all I have, I'll hold on to it.
Michigan author Steve Luxenberg's book is called Annie's Ghosts. The novel, based on a real-life relative of the author, is this year's Great Michigan Read selection.